What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 6, already in progress. This is part 2 of 3 of our predictions with Jeff Cannata and Scott Kurtz. We're going to pick it up with them getting into their long-term predictions.
So, chat, let's move on to our long-term predictions. These are the long-term sci-fi, weird, strange, turning, rolled upside-down predictions for the next, say, 50 to 100 years. This time, let's start with Brother Kurtz over here. What do you think is going to come up in the next 100 years, let's say?
Okay. In the next 100 years, I predict that the United Nations, or an entity serving the same function as the United Nations, will officially recognize the first virtual country.
Ooh, wild.
Consisting completely of a virtual society.
Is it Azeroth?
Well, it could be, but doesn't it seem like everything's heading that way? I mean, in the next 100 years, if you think about how much technology is being crammed into your phone now and how much you can do online now, I mean, how much more of our life can be integrated into a virtual setting? Pretty much most of it. And you could become a citizen of a virtual country that had virtual social laws, but that is recognized by the United Nations as sovereign, virtually sovereign.
Wow. So wait, but okay.
I don't know. Like, who's in it? You could be in it. It could be, I mean.
Am I a two-state dude then? Like, I'm a United States citizen and, yeah, am I
dual, you would have a dual citizenship because it I mean, yeah.
Your physical location is
one. You have a physical citizenship and then you have a virtual citizenship.
Dude. Hmm.
And they're gonna have no other choice because it's gonna start happening on its own,
right.
And it's gonna become such an economic force and such a societal force that they're gonna have no choice but to somehow integrate it or,
and therefore what provide representation?
Or face
it. We'd have representation in like things like the UN or whatever. That's maybe pushing it, but your point is that they would have a voice in things that affect.
Exactly.
Okay, that's interesting. That's that's maybe one of my favorite ones we've had on this show.
Yeah.
No offense, Leo Laporte and MC Frontalot.
Hey, I brought it.
That's intense, man. It's like Twitter as a country.
Yeah.
Well, think about it.
Thinking Second Life or something like that, right?
Well, you know what really brought it up, as silly as it sounds, and Scott, you'll appreciate this, was I was thinking to myself, and I don't know why this felt like some weird tipping point, but Blizzard introduced their first it's actually a macro transaction, but their first micro transaction where they offered a pet for money.
Yep.
And for about 2 or 3 months, half of the money goes to the Make-A-Wish Foundation. But then after that, they're just going to start selling stuff. Like, it's not even like selling a service like, let's change your character from Alliance to Horde, or let's move your race faction, things that are a convenience for you to continue to play the game easily. It is, you are spending money on virtual vanity items.
Yeah, virtual goods. Stuff that's not real, yeah.
And it just felt like that was some big tipping point for me, and I thought, man, I mean, pretty soon you could have – I mean, you could work. I mean, because I do. I work remotely. I work from my home. I make a living. But there's so many people that work remotely. You could socialize remotely. So, I mean, I can already earn a living and have a complete social life virtually already.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think there's two factors that have to be in play here. You mentioned that this is a tipping point for Blizzard, and I would agree. But the reason I agree, and we're going to talk about this like crazy on the instance tomorrow, but they're not the first to do this. But they're because Sony did this with EverQuest 2, and others have tried it, and some have failed, some still do it, and it's just sort of mediocre. But when you combine a player base the size of World of Warcraft with an initiative like this, it then becomes a big deal. To some people, a scary deal. To some people, a sellout deal. To other people, a interesting step toward the future you're talking about.
Yeah. And Second Life has already gone through a lot of the growing pains of a country already, right? They've had bank scandals. They've had sort of virtual assaults
and crimes, usually flying penises, but all kinds of other things.
Yeah.
Running around. They have people setting up virtual businesses, making money off of them,
yeah.
turning that into their job. So it's a logical next step for somewhere, whether it's Second Life or I don't know if you can do it with Warcraft because it's so under Blizzard's control what you do there, right? I don't think Azeroth becomes a country, yeah. but maybe Blizzard's next project, that secret project, ends up being something a little freer, and suddenly people are setting up stake and saying, no, you know what? We have a need. And I've been sitting here this whole time while we're trying to figure out what would be that need that would be the leverage to push the UN into needing to recognize, because it's not going to be
a geographical
one.
Oh, I'll tell you exactly what's happened. I'm going to tell you exactly the way I predicted, okay? See, because if you think about it, all these virtual societies that we live in now are game-based, they're entertainment-based, and they've happened within the last, what, 10 years?
Yeah, 10, 15 maybe.
Okay. So this is all brand new to us. Because, I mean, I remember when PvP first started in 1998. That's when Ultima On first came online, and that was like the Wild West, you know? It was whatever
like
armor
mud,
you wore.
But I can see people.
Yeah. So this, everything we've done now at these virtual societies have within the last 10 years. If you take that now and expand 100 years from now, it's going to be one of these like sleeping giants that suddenly, if we don't support it, the world economy is effed. You know, like suddenly you wake up one day and realize, oh my God, these banks are giant. And if they fail, we're screwed.
Too big to fail. You know?
Huh. Yeah, because if you think about it right now, you have things that are separate. Like EverQuest is a game that lives on the EverQuest server, and Warcraft is a game that lives on Warcraft. Well, in 100 years, who knows how all these computers are going to be connected through phones? Everything's going to connect to everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I agree.
Pretty soon, you're going to wake up and realize, holy crap, we have this, we literally have a sovereign country.
Okay, now let's say that I absolutely love this prediction, because look what you can start adding on to this prediction. For example, so like TRS, big fan base, lots of people. You have a community.
Country.
Extra life.
We want our sovereignty.
My shows and my site, my comic, I've got a community. We have an event every year. It's a huge deal. It's a community. Scott Kurtz has a big community around PvP Online. These are communities within this larger structure,
yeah,
of online nation or whatever. I can totally see a future where if that tipping point happens, you could easily see all of this stuff sort of fold into that. But then are we just becoming precogs in a pool of water, naked with bald heads going, eh? I mean, we're not really living
anymore. And you know, yeah, what? I was thinking about that too. And for some reason, and I don't know why, maybe just wishful thinking, because I'm more of a Spielberg than I am a Kubrick, you know, and I want it to be more like, you know, E.T. than Blade Runner maybe. But I think that things are going so crazy right now and so fast that wouldn't it be nice if we could take all of this, because we'll never give it up. I mean, we'll never give it up. I was at dinner the other night and my friend looked over and said, it's very nice that the back of my phone couldn't have dinner with the back of your phones tonight. And we were all on our iPhones, okay? But what I'm saying is I don't think we'll ever want to give that up, but it would be nice if you could put it somewhere and if you could compartmentalize it. And if it's like that movie, The Surrogates, I mean, you could end up, The Circuit's, you know, posited that you're just asleep in your house. But what if you had all this virtual life, this whole thing, and then you had this very minimal life where you're out in the woods and you live on, you know, you're living in the city and you just
back
now
to
you're
the basics, right?
Now you're who you really are.
Yeah.
You know,
separating that is the tricky part of my
life. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So no virtualization without representation.
That's right.
Yes.
That may be, write that down. Write that down. That's maybe a good show title tonight.
The Boston Bandwidth Party.
Oh. All right. Well, Jeff, I don't know how you're going to compete here, but what
I can't.
Yeah,
I cannot.
What do you have?
It's interesting. What I brought to the table for the long term prediction is sort of the pessimistic version of what Scott just said. I think that in 100 years, there won't be an America as we know it. And I don't say that because I'm some America hating. I don't even say it from a political perspective.
Just kidding. Keep going.
And I don't want it to come true.
Right.
But I fear that the level of navel gazing that we as Americans do and the lack of caring about anything that I see manifest in my generation and the generation below mine, I fear that the end result of that, the lack of emphasis on education, the fact that, you know, people have this sense of entitlement to a life that they don't want to work for, I fear that what ends up happening is that we don't have we lose our place in the world. And perhaps
do you mean the country goes away or breaks up or just becomes irrelevant?
I think becomes irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't think that we'll cease to be in America. I think there will we will cease to be a player in the world.
We'll be a server farm.
Yeah,
we'll be North American server farm.
You know, idiocracy a little bit is kind of the future that I'm talking about. And you know, it's interesting because I'm someone who makes my living by telling people about escapism, essentially, and kind of praising escapism. So I think there's a part of me that feels really guilty about that. And maybe that's where this is coming from, is kind of a manifestation of my own sort of weird feelings of, I love video games. I love movies. I love entertainment. And I obsess about it. And I see a lot of people in my social sphere doing the same. And I sometimes wonder if we're just going down the road to our own irrelevancy.
Well, you say that, but then on the other hand, as an outside observer who follows you on Twitter, you're the guy who I catch every couple of tweets saying things like, I'm going camping this weekend with my dad and I can't wait. Or everybody should go out and run 10 miles. It was amazing. Or I'm unplugging for a week while we go on this hiking trip. And I'm seeing from you, and I think other people in this sphere, in our collective wheelhouse, that are saying similar things. And so I guess if we're going to reach the utopia Scott describes without the downside you've described, and I think it's a real danger that you're right, we just have to have a lot of people like that. Still, and we can't guarantee that, but I think what you're saying, you're just showing your value system here, and that's all. And I wish more, I wish more people shared it, because it would be less of this sort of, I want to escape from everything, and it would be more like, this is enhancing everything, or this creates new avenues of creativity. Video games are about creativity, and they're amazing, and when they go crazy with innovation, you're not thinking, we are becoming drones, we're better at this than we've ever been. What you're thinking is, oh, that was amazing, now I've got to go kayaking next week. You know what I mean? Anyway,
maybe we can just virtualize America off the physical partition.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So we combine the two.
But
I understand what you're saying, though, Jeff, because I mean, I'm starting to feel like I'm becoming a part of an older generation, I guess. I'm going to be 39 in March, and I'm talking to people. I have that are decidingly younger than me. And a good example is I have a college intern that's going to come spend a couple months before her winter semester at the Savannah College of Art and Design starts. And this is an intern who's going to be starting college, who's 19. And one of the things I'm kind of excited about, other than dumping a crap load of work on her that I don't want to do myself, is kind of picking the brain of what's it like to be in college now. And the things that kind of scare me is that, like, I was talking to my friend who I grew up with in the 80s, and we played video games nonstop. Of course, our video games were Ataris, 2600s. But the thing that scares me a lot about this generation is when I say to my friend Rob, God, we watched all these horrible movies. We watched movies where people shot each other. How come we didn't go into a school and kill everybody? And my friend Rob said, because we – when you thought about the future, what did you think about? Why didn't you want to take a gun to school? As bad as it was, as bad as you were picked on, because we were picked on. And I said, well, because I don't want to throw my life away. And he's like, well, why didn't you want to throw your life away? And I'm like, well, because, you know, I mean, then I'd miss out on college and getting married and meeting someone and having a job and having a life. And he goes, right, but that's because you saw your parents had that and you assumed you'd have it too. Mm-hmm. And these kids aren't seeing that. They're seeing there's nothing ahead but more crap.
Well, and, I don't know, though, because I'm about the same age, and when I was growing up, a lot of us thought, oh, we're all going to die in a nuclear war, so there's no future.
After the day after?
Well, Jeff's the puppy in this group. We're all almost the same age, Scott and Tom and I.
That's unusual for me. I'm usually the oldest whenever I'm hanging around with the guy, TRS guys. But
what do you kids think, Jeff?
I mean, I hate to have brought the podcast down to such a depressing level.
No, this is good.
It is a little bit like old guy sitting in his front porch yelling at the kids, but I do feel like there's this sense of entitlement that has happened to our culture where – I mean, and that brings up the whole like credit crisis that we're experiencing in this country right now, and people who think they are and I think to bring it back to a little bit to technology, I think maybe with social media and Twitter and YouTube, there is this sense of being famous and rich that people feel is a birthright rather than a reward for actually doing good work, or maybe not even a reward that's worth chasing. That simply having a rich life is enough rather than being rich, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I mean, I'm in a stage in my life where my priorities are pretty clear for me. It's all about my kids, my wife, and then all this stuff.
Yeah.
But what is interesting about that is that it's taking a very serious third chair though. So to my kids and to my wife and my family, and they're everything to me, but then all this is a lot to me. And I wonder some days if this is too much to me. I'm not trying to expose something about myself here. I'm just saying that
we are recording in the nude, but other than
that. Yeah, we are recording naked. It helps loosen
too?
Us up.
Oh,
it loosens
so
us up. Oh, well, no, so you can't, yeah. We're,
I'm taking my clothes off. Hold on. I'm wearing clothes like a sucker.
Yeah, as we head into four.
Jeff, that sense of entitlement you're talking about, I see it all the time with my comic strip. And I always thought it was maybe a byproduct of the fact that a lot of what I sell is myself. So it's not just what I put out in the world is my work and they know my characters. I mean, I blog, I Twitter, people know about me. When people come up to cons, they don't just say, that strip was really funny, or this is my favorite story you did. How are the dogs? How's your wife? You know, I won't shake your hand because I know you don't like shaking hands. You know, they know about me. And there's this very odd – I don't know them, but they know me. And so there's this weird relationship that they think they have already. But then on top of that, there's this really – and I don't see it so much with the older fans and readers. But there's this weird sense of entitlement like where you'll get an email and it'll say, hey, I don't like the mixed styles you're using, or I don't like this that you're doing. You need to change it. And when you say, wow, why would you email me that? How could you – what makes you think that you get a say in that? And their response is, swear to God, I bought a book. You know?
We get that all the time. All the time with TRS as well. The kind of it's not a suggestion. It's not a criticism. A command.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not buying anything from us. You know, it's a free product we're putting out there. But
I think that a lot of this is nothing new. I think that all of these behaviors, all of these senses of entitlement, and the people who are pushy, and even the folks who see no future and want to do something crazy like shooting up a school, it's all existed before. We just have a lot more people. So you have a much higher incidence of something happening. We have a lot more technology. We have a lot more places to hide and a lot more exposure to each other, ways to communicate. So I think some of the best and worst aspects of humanity get emphasized,
magnified,
and get reported and get magnified. And I think maybe that's a good thing. Because it causes us to have these reactions of like, I don't know, I think this is bad. I think that, you know, maybe the humanity is going down the drain. Because people have been talking about humanity going down the drain since the Roman times. I mean, that's every generation thinks that the generation coming up behind it is ruining everything they've worked for. And things go in cycles. I mean, you talk about going back to talking about America becoming irrelevant. There's a theory that essentially world powers rise for about 100 years. And every once in a while, they rise for a little longer, a little shorter, and they vacillate between sea power and land power. And we're right now nearing the end of a dominant period where Russia and the United States were dominant land powers. Before that, it was Great Britain as a sea power. Before that, it was France and Spain as land powers. So, you know, it's just these cycles that go along. And I'm not trying to say that anything that you guys have said are wrong, because I see all the same stuff that you're talking about, but I always try to keep that perspective of, like, things look a lot worse close up than when you back off a ways and go, actually, yeah, a lot of this stuff isn't new.
It's kind of like New Orleans. It looks way worse when you're up close. But I would say this, finally, not to beat a dead horse, but, you know, here we are in a world where Jeff has got one of the most popular video shows on the web. He now lives in a world where the gates have been opened. There's no more single gatekeeper to get through. Scott and I publish comics every day because we can, and we are now publishing to the world. And 20 years ago, we couldn't have done that if we wanted to. We had to go through syndication and all these tiny little holes to get out to the broader public. So since all of that changed, we have to expect that some of this other stuff changes. And that last year's Nerdtacular, my annual fan appreciation event, some 15-year-old kid drove all the way out here, hitchhiked all the way out from California, 15 years old, didn't tell his parents he was coming, and showed up at my doorstep and stayed here for the little party and barbecue and all the stuff we did. And I was freaked out by that, completely freaked out by it.
Yeah.
And maybe all that's happened is, John Hinckley can just come to more common dudes now. Like, we're just guys, but we have access to more people because of this technology, so we're just getting our share of not just stalkers, but also of the good stuff that comes from that, like the people saying, Scott, how's your dog doing, or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of with Tom on this, and we probably all are, but this idea that perspective is everything I think really applies here.
Yeah, and I hope nobody takes away the wrong impression that I'm complaining about our fans or anything like that. And or that I hate America. I mean, it is a pretty hypocritical statement to say, you know, people are entitled to notoriety when, you know, I am a known quantity to a larger number of people than I ever. I just think it's an interesting thing to.
Sorry. The fans are censoring you.
The Skype, someone's hacking Skype. They heard you.
Kanata's getting big for his britches. Cut him off.
Even
you unpatriotic misanthrope. I'll bring your packets down.
Dude, I would be happy to be called an unpatriotic misanthrope because it would reveal that person knows what misanthrope means.
Yeah, exactly. No. That's
a
trick.
The title of somebody's biography.
Maybe everything's going to be okay.
And with that, we end part 2 of 3 of our forecast discussion with Jeff Kanata and Scott Kurtz. But don't despair. There's crazy-ass predictions and 4 questions coming up in the next episode of Forecast, which will be coming to you soon in your podcast feed or blog or however you choose to consume it. ForecastPodcast.com is the website. ForecastPodcast@gmail.com is the email address. Send us your predictions. Talk to you soon.
But it's only 32 years away.